Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Starting in the late 50s, Haiti entered a painful era under the rule of President François Duvalier, better known as Papa Doc. Under his regime, people were arrested and killed for speaking out against the government. Thousands ended up in a prison known as Fort Dimanche. And this is the backdrop of the book Dancing in the Barren Shadow by local author Fabienne Josephat. It was her first novel and a personal one, considering her two protagonists are based on real people and her family's history with the Duvaliers. We spoke with her about her inspirations and how she, as a Haitian, tries to make peace with that Haitian history. We started by asking, was this the first project that she got published or the first one that she tried writing?
This is the one that I actually managed to finish. I was tinkering with a couple of ideas. But this one, when I started working on it, I got really excited about the subject, and I fell in love with the characters. And for some reason, I couldn't stop writing. So I kept writing, and next thing I knew, I was on my way to ending, and I have to say, a screenplay, because I actually started writing it as a screenplay. And then I finished the entire manuscript and moved on from there and decided to turn it into a novel because I wanted to have more opportunity to develop the characters, and that's how the novel came to be.
Where did the idea come from, and did it start with the characters?
It sort of started with the characters. So part of the idea came from the fact that the characters are inspired by true characters. So Nicholas's character, the attorney in the novel, is based on my father, and my father was an attorney in Haiti, and in the I believe 80s, early 80s, he was arrested under Baby Doc's government and went to prison for a while. And I always wanted to write about that because I was very curious about the why and the how and what happened. And he never really wanted to talk about it because it was too painful for him. And I think he didn't want to put that burden on me. He was trying to shelter me. So that sort of piqued my curiosity. And that's how the character of Nicholas came to be. And the other character in the novel, Raymond, is based on my uncle, who was actually a taxi driver. So what's interesting about my father and my uncle is that they've always had a very strained relationship. They never really got along very well. They did okay, but there was always a lot of tension between them. And growing up, I never understood why, because it's hard for me to fathom a family dynamic like theirs. So I told myself it would be interesting to write about two brothers who don't really get along, who are living in two different circumstances, and what if they were actually living under the regime of Duvalier, which I found also very interesting because historically it's a very traumatic experience for the Haitian people. What if they were actually living in that era, as my father and uncle did, and what would they do if one of them actually went to prison? What would the other one have to do? And that's how the novel came to be.
It is so interesting that you say that now. When I think back to the relationship Raymond and Nicholas had as young brothers, they were close, but you could tell where they were separating. And then, of course, one goes on to be bourgeois. He's a professor in law, and he's got money.
Right.
Raymond is the taxi driver, barely
getting
by.
Yeah.
And that's the point of tension between them.
Right.
Do you know if that was the point of tension between your father?
I think it was definitely one of the points of tension. And they never really articulated it. But I think in the end, it became clear that my father, from what I could observe, had removed himself so much from growing up in harsh circumstances that it was difficult for him to deal with it. Every time we went back home, we would go visit my grandfather. As much as I enjoyed visiting my grandparents when I was little, every now and then there would be a moment of tension. And now that I'm older, I think what it was, I think, is that it was difficult for him to go back into that circumstance. So I think dealing with my uncle reminded him of that.
I wanted to get a sense of where you were when your father was arrested. I mean, at that point, were you born yet or where were you?
Well, actually, I was born in 1979. So actually, I was wrong. I got my years mixed up because when my father was arrested, that was way before that.
Okay.
Baby Doc left Haiti in the 80s. So I wasn't born yet. But when I grew up, I remembered very clearly driving past the prison that I describe in the novel And I have memories, very vague memories, of what it used to be like to live in that climate right before baby Doc left.
And you're talking about Fort Dimanche.
Fort Dimanche, right.
And we're going to get to that in a second, because that, you know, a big portion of your story takes place there. And it is a difficult part of the book to read, the detail that you got. You know what, this story, let's go back. This story takes us to Haiti in the 60s. This again under Francois Duvalier, Papa Doc. For you, how much research did you have to do? And I'm curious as to how Haitians think about and talk about him today, or do they not?
They do. They do. And it's, I'm going to say there's a mixed, from what I'm getting, mixed reaction to what the government used to be. A lot of times you'll find, no matter how traumatic it was and how violent the era was, you'll find a lot of Haitians who still reminisce about the era and say things like there was more security and more of a sense of safety back in the day, which is interesting because there were so many people who died. And so it's always a strange contradiction for me listening to these people reminisce and sort of romanticize an era that was so brutal for so many others.
Well, I think it was, you say that, and all that keeps popping back in my head are the his Papa Doc's militia, his
yes,
security
the
guard.
Yes, Toto Makut, right.
And I'm thinking,
right.
Where's the safety? I don't right. understand.
Yeah, so what happened was that when Papa Doc became leader of Haiti, he actually had his own militia called the Toto Makut, aside from the police and the military. And they would do whatever Papa Doc willed them to do. They were there to do his bidding. So a lot of people actually were arrested and brutalized because of the Toto Makut. And it's interesting, again, when people say they reminisce about the era, they say, well, there was more sense of a security or a safety, meaning, well, you know, actually I felt better walking down the streets when it was late. But this must be coming from someone who didn't suffer because so many other people suffered. And so I don't know if they're actually hearing themselves when they say this, but I was always interested in that contradiction.
I'm talking with Fabien Josephat, author of the Sundial Book Club for May. The book that we've been reading is Dancing in the Baron's Shadow. Again, you can learn more about it. Find us on Facebook. Find Sundial Book Club. Ask to join. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We've heard from people like Libia Casas. She said, I started the book. Amazing. So well written. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the book. Again, this is the May book for the Sundial Book Club. And again, talking with the author, Fabien Josephat. So, I mean, you know, in part, you write a story that is extremely entertaining, but you want to be historically correct.
Yes.
So did you find that difficult? I don't know, because going back and I had to, you know, learn new things about what I did not know about Haitian history. And I thought, wow, there's just so much. I don't know. You could just take this. It would be an unbelievable story already.
Right. Well, it was interesting. I don't know that it was necessarily difficult, but there was so much information there. There's so much written about the era, first of all, in nonfiction form, right? And it's so. I started out by having to read a lot of material. And once I did that, I just couldn't stop there. I realized, well, you know, reading that is interesting, but it still doesn't really explain what Fort Dimanche was at the time. And it certainly doesn't tell me what that was like. You know, and when you read books about history, you get a lot of facts and accounts, but you don't get the emotional weight of what that was like.
Right.
Until you talk to people. So that's what I had to do. So my research was interesting because I was learning a lot of information that I didn't know. And I was also talking to people and learning what that was really like to not only live in the era, but also what it was like to be in Fort Dimanche and make it out if you were lucky enough to make it out, because most people didn't.
And so you talked to people who were in there.
Yeah, I did. I did. Actually, one of the people that that was so helpful for my novel was Jean Mapou, who is down in Little Haiti and runs the famous Mapou bookstore down there. Mapou was in Fort Dimanche in the 80s under Baby Doc. And because of him, I was able to understand what it was like inside, because the prison no longer exists. It was torn down in the 90s. So it was interesting because I was able to have an inside view. The smells, the sights, the noises, you know, the sounds. the routine of the guards and the footsteps and all that stuff. And also some of the material I read was able to paint a clearer picture of me on the inside of the prison, added to what I used to see on the outside driving by.
Right, thinking back now, as I was reading through that portion of the book, it's so uncomfortable because you have not only the sense of claustrophobic sense of what it must have been like in those cells, but as you described too, it's these men who are sickly.
Yes.
And, you know, there's no sanitation.
Right.
There's nothing. So now they're living within their own waste and
they are.
All of this. And I just thought, where did she get the detail?
Yeah, well, that's how I got it.
Very detailed. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it was very painful to write about. Even though I was fictionalizing a lot, knowing that that's what it was like. And actually, if you go back to videos, I think on YouTube they might still be up there. There are a couple of videos of people who actually, before the prison was torn down, took journalists back into what the prison was like and what it was like to be in a cell, to stand there and be able to reach both walls with your hands. It was very uncomfortable and depressing to write about.
Again, your story is about, it focuses on these two brothers, Nicholas and Raymond. Again, Raymond is the taxi driver, struggling to get by in life. Nicholas, of course, his brother, who is a professor and is doing well. What's interesting is Nicholas is, he wants to bring down the Papa Doc regime, and he has this book, his notebook of names and information, and he believes this could do it. And everybody warns him, don't.
Right.
You're putting your family at risk.
Right.
I wondered if you had run into anybody also along those lines. I know this was inspired by your father, but if you'd run into anybody along those lines who had that kind of feeling, like, whatever it takes, we must bring this man down, and that they lived to tell the story. Did you ever find anyone like that?
I don't. Off the top of my head, I can't say that I've talked to anyone who went that far. But I've always had an admiration for people who did go that far, for people who were so incensed and outraged by the injustice and unfairness of what was happening because of leaders and who actually took action. And it was interesting because that's one of the things that I find people often disbelieve. You know, people would say, well, if you have a family, why would you put yourself and your family in so much danger? And that's what I find admirable about someone who's heroic. It's not that they want to put their families in danger, it's that we get to a point where something has to be done. Someone has to do something. And so Nicholas, in his mind, in the novel, is using his own skills and doing what he knows best. And he knows the law, and he knows that he has a right to speak up, even if it means that he's crossing a line and he's going to get a lot of pushback. And he's in the novel hoping that he can save his family before it happens. So unfortunately, he gets himself in trouble despite that.
I find fascinating how the characters believe themselves to be strong, but they're put in situations where they really have to. Then they're really tested to see how strong they are. Nicholas, when he's put in this prison, he finds out what he's really made of. But then you also have Raymond on the other side. And I thought this was a fascinating aspect of the story, which goes to what we've been seeing for many years. People in Haiti trying to escape and make it to Miami.
Right.
He has to deal with loss on so many levels. Raymond has to deal with the loss of the fact that, you know, he's got family that tries to get out.
Right.
And wants to come to Miami because they think this is a better place.
Right, right.
And in all sense, it is better, right?
Sure.
It is, but it's still an uncertainty.
It's and they have to make a choice, right? We're going to die. So I'm going to die on my way towards the uncertainty rather than stay here and face that certain death. And that's a choice I think people are still making today, which is, it's harrowing when you think about it. I think thinking about people who have to migrate or become refugees and pick up their children and go towards a destination and it's uncertain, it's terrifying. But they're doing it because they're trying to make a better situation for their family. So Raymond's family is in that position, right? They have to decide whether they're going to stay here or whether they have to go somewhere else and make a better situation for the children, because he does have small children.
One of the things I find interesting about the story, whether it's Haitians or Cubans, you have people who are trying to escape And yet there's still always a desire to go back because it's home.
Right.
And so this is a question that both Raymond and Nicholas have to, they pose to themselves at one point. They have to try to get out. And then, of course, it's the question of, can we ever go back?
Sure. Yeah. Because what does going back mean, especially if we're coming back to the same regime, which is, you know, and as what we know about Haitian history is after Papa Doc, Baby Doc takes over.
His
so it's
son,
a
yeah.
very long, almost non-ending regime, which eventually in reality does end. But it's, you know, they have to consider the fact that if they come back, what does that mean? Because we're going to be captured. We're going to undergo, you know, we're going to die. So it's. You know, it's a decision that they have to make, and they have to think about that seriously, which might mean for them that they are going to be exiles forever, perhaps.
You're listening to a previous conversation that we had with author Fabienne Josephat. Her book, Dancing in the Barren Shadow, is the May title for the Sundial Book Club. You can find more information on our Facebook page, Sundial Book Club. Ask to join. It's free, and we'd love to have you. We'll hear the second part of this conversation in just a moment. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Let's get back to our conversation with author Fabienne Josephat. Her book, Dancing in the Barren Shadow, is the May title for the Sundial Book Club. Her story takes place under the regime of Papa Doc in Haiti. He was the president of the country from the late 1950s into the early 1970s, and under his regime, tens of thousands of Haitians were either killed or held captive. Our conversation with Ms. Josephat comes as violence continues to plague the country now. It was recently reported by the Miami Herald that 6 months ago, over the course of 4 days, women, men, and children were murdered and raped in one of the poorest neighborhoods in the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince. You can find more on that story by going to WLRN.org. We spoke with Josephat about the current political situation in Haiti, how the U.S. covers Haitian stories, and we hear from you, our listeners.
What have you heard from Haitians who've read the book? About, you know, especially those who really do have links to that history.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is someone once came to my reading and picked up the book and looked at the cover and said to me, "You are very brave." And this was this was just a couple of years ago, mind you, which says to me was very telling because it says a lot about how Haitians still think of the era. She thought I was being brave for putting the photograph of a now dead leader on the cover. There are a lot of Haitians who are still very uncomfortable about
the image,
just talking about Papa Doc. And let's, you know, when we think about it, a lot of people died under his orders. People who are survivors, right? So it's interesting because people have, there's this history where there are people who are still supporters, and then there are people who are staunchly against. And it's, you know, so today still, the conversation is still existing about whether we're going to go back to that or, you know, can we move forward? So,
You know, I was thinking about this, you know, in thinking about the questions I wanted to ask you. And then, of course, there's the news in Haiti right now of the deaths that have occurred and the violence that's occurring. And I'm just thinking, wow, I mean, this is historic. This goes back many decades. And yet, no, the story is still going on. It's a little different, but it's still this. Yeah. It's that story of what's happening back home.
Yeah.
I don't know when you see that. I mean, for you, you know, I wonder what goes through your mind.
It just speaks to an endless cycle of violence, unfortunately. I feel like Haiti is always struggling to get away from that. And unfortunately, you know, we always have situations in which people are just subjected to violence. So it's painful to see. But I feel hopeful, even if I know some people are not. I really feel hopeful because the youth especially is very vocal. And there are a lot of people out there who are really hopeful that they can move Haiti forward from that cycle of violence, from that history and that traumatic, you know, those traumatic events. I don't know when or how, but I'm hoping that we'll be able to move away from that.
What do you think we, I guess, as non-Haitians, get wrong about Haiti?
I spend a lot of time sometimes avoiding images of Haiti seen through international lens, because I feel like we've always placed Haiti into this little spot where it's always in the same sentence as the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. I'm not sure why, but everyone puts that sentence together in every news article. Or the word violence is always in there. And I hear people say things like, I had someone once say to me that Haitians are unable to govern themselves. I find that offensive and hurtful, because I feel like what we get wrong is that we don't realize how isolated Haiti is. And I think that as Haitians, we've been put in a position where we're constantly being told what to do, we're being interfered with, we're put in a position where we cannot make decisions without international influence. I think people should have a better understanding of how those things work before placing Haiti in that category.
I'm talking with Fabian Josephat, author of the Sundial Book Club for May. The book that we've been reading is Dancing in the Baron's Shadow. Again, you can learn more about it. Find us on Facebook. Find Sundial Book Club. Ask to join. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We've heard from people like Donnelly Dorset said, I cannot put it down. Cannot wait to read more. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the book. This is the May book for the Sundial Book Club. And again, talking with the author, Fabian Josephat. To switch things up a little bit, you were recently at the Museum of Art and Design talking about your writing and your books. I wanted to know how the event went down and what and who you got to talk to.
So the event was about Miami. It was to write Miami. So I did things a little differently. I'd never done this before, but I collaborated with my husband, who's a drummer, and I asked him if he would play the drums for me in the background, which he did. He was great. But really what I wanted to do is talk about what it was like to be a writer in Miami. And what I did is I did some reading and talking. So I introduced myself and talked about what it's like to know Miami, to get out there, to interact with the city and understand the city and its smells and the sights and the sounds of the city and really know it very well in order to be able to write about it. And then I read a short story about Miami, characters in Miami who are living. And the story that I actually read was a story about a woman who went to a botanica for the first time because she wanted a service done. She was afraid her husband was leaving her. I think it's a very Miami thing to do because, it's just I'm just very interested in the culture.
Yep.
And, a Haitian woman who turns away from her church and goes to a botanica to get more help to solve her problems. I'm like, this is life. This is what Miami is, every day. So that's what I did. I thought the event was interesting because I was able to do both talking and reading, and people got to ask me questions afterwards. I thought the atmosphere was great and conducive, and it was helpful for the people to understand what it's like to really be a writer.
And as a writer, what are you working on now?
I am working on another novel that's also historical, except this time this takes place here. When I say here, I should say the United States, not in Miami. So I'm exploring the 60s and 70s in America, and I have a character that I'm working on now. I don't want to say too much about it, but she's getting caught in the radical movements of the 60s and 70s. So it's really a coming of age story.
So fascinating then that era is, I guess, is attractive to you. And I wonder why.
I do too. I have really not found an answer, but I still find myself very attracted to the 60s and 70s. Ever since I was a child, my father always wondered why I always listened to that type of music and why am I, I don't know what it is. I like it though.
Is there something, anything in particular about that era though that jumps out at you? Whether it's the politics or the music, the writing, the whatever, is there something that really jumps out for you?
Yes. So I guess what I'm exploring in this novel is an aspect of the civil rights history. I am really interested in the way that radical Black movements, for example, like the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, operated at the time, and I became really interested in how the media sort of distorted a lot of the history around the movement. I became interested in the things that they did that were sort of swept under the rug and I wanted to explore that. So that's really what I'm writing about right now.
All right. So when you finish, then you can come back and you can talk about that. So,
well, thank you. That's an invitation. I'll take you up on that.
Absolutely. All right. So that we did get a Sundial Book Club member who wanted to share this with us. This is Karen Tagizogi. I hope I'm saying that right. Shared this with us. I finished the book a week ago. Sadly, the brutality, fear, and the horror depression that the two brothers and all of Haiti experienced under Papa Doc was similar to what millions of other people in the world have suffered under evil rulers. It's unconscionable and is a never-ending battle. I admire Raymond's commitment and tenacity to help his brother. That is something that is really lovely, even though the two brothers are not always agreeing. Actually, they're fighting a lot of the time. They don't even see each other that often. And not to give a lot away, but what Raymond has to do, he makes a decision, and he could leave. He makes a decision and puts his life on the line to try to save his brother.
Right. I find that admirable and heroic too. I think in their way, both brothers are heroic. But I think Raymond is more of a hero because he, like you said, he had the opportunity to leave, but he just could not leave knowing that he did have a relative who was certainly alive, but was probably not going to make it if he was arrested in prison.
But it almost, you know what, you painted a beautiful picture in that I got the sense that he felt an obligation, and even in the way you described their childhood, he was always watching over his brother anyway.
Right. And because he does have a lot of love and compassion in his heart, even though the other, you know, his other brother treats him poorly sometimes, he feels a sense of responsibility to go out there and help him and save him. And so leaving without trying his best is difficult for him. So that informs his decision to stay and at least try to do something.
It is really an amazing read. It is difficult at times, I will admit. Again, the detail that you hit is, you know, when you talk about the oppression, you talk about the way that people were treated, especially in the prison, it is difficult to get through, but it is powerful. It is a wonderful read. Fabian, thank you so much.
Thank you really so much, Luis. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
That was the recent conversation that we had with Fabian Josephat, author of the book Dancing in the Barren Shadow. That is the May title of the Sundial Book Club. And if you're not a member, find us on Facebook. We'd love to have you. It's free. And we're asking all of our members, for this upcoming summer, what genre do you enjoy reading most? Again, find us on Facebook, Sundial Book Club. Well, still to come, comedian Howie Mandel came by our studios not too long ago and told me that I needed to take my doctor's advice seriously when it comes to high cholesterol. He has a message to share with many of us about his own personal experience with the issue, and that's coming up next on Sundial.